Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, press star followed by two. Your first question comes from the line of Chris Glynn with Oppenheimer.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Question on industrial orders outlook, excluding the Iraq movement into the second quarter. What's your outlook there, and do you think 1Q looks like a low here on the equipment side in particular?
Oh, I would say, Chris, that again, there, Iraq is a substantial order. Healthcare looks pretty good. We think the aviation cycle, similar to what you hear from other people, improves as we go through the year. Energy, we always track commitments into orders. I think the aero derivatives and Yenbacher tend to be leading indicators of customer interest from an energy standpoint. Transportation, there was probably 5,000 locomotives parked at the end of last year. There's more like 4,000 parked now. We've got lots of global demand there. You basically haven't seen any impact of stimulus in the company. A lot of the smart grid orders were pushed from first quarter to second quarter because there was some confusion around the tax payment. So I think those are yet to be had. So I just think the profile for the balance of the year is going to be pretty positive.
I think if you look at the pace of change on orders going back through the last several quarters, Chris, you can see it. I mean, the second quarter last year was down 42% on equipment. Third quarter last year was down 32%. Fourth quarter is down 14%. This year we were down 10%. We'd be flat if we had the Iraq order in there. So I think the pace and the comparisons support continued gradual improvement. And as you know, they're lumpy. I mean, we're going to have some big orders that drop into different periods. But I think overall the trend is continuing.
Okay, and then just looking at the cash on hand, the improvements of capital and some of the commentary just to my prior question, anything that could cause dividend increase to be pulled forward into 2010?
Oh, Chris, I just can't comment on stuff like that. I think we have a strong intent to create financial flexibility. We've got good optionality. We've got a set of priorities as a management team and as a board in terms of, how we look at it. I think what Keith said in February is there is a dividend increase in your future, and I'll just leave it at that.
Understood. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Scott Davis with Morgan Stanley.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Hey, morning, Scott.
Can you, maybe Keith, give us a little bit more sense of what's going on at Shinsei Bank? I mean, I guess the confidence that you've fenced in this these losses with the charge that you took.
Sure. I think, as you know, we closed this in the third quarter of 2008, and, we have a loss agreement with Shinsei, but the economy's been terrible, and there have been a lot of different changes in the legislation and the regulatory environment. For example, in the legislation, lenders in the consumer finance space are no longer going to be allowed to give loans to people who have greater than 30% debt to income, and that will go into effect in the end of June of 2010. Now, that's been known for about 18 months, but that's getting very close, and is that increasing claims disproportionately? We don't know. There have been some changes from a regulator perspective where customers who file a gray zone claim are no longer flagged in the credit bureau system. And so does that change the behavior of claims? And so we've seen a pickup in the last several months in terms of the overall claims severity. The number of claims have gone down. The average amount per claim is higher than what was in our model, and it's volatile. And so what I would say is, we update that model every quarter. We've done a lot of work on what do we see as claim trends, what could the liability be, what's the sharing with Shinsei, what's left. And, we added $380 million to the reserve this quarter. A couple of points. Number one, we still have not used up the amount that we established for the potential liability when we formed this transaction with Shinsei, so there's amount left from the original deal that's still there. And in addition to that, we booked up $500 million of additional provisions between the second quarter last year and the amount we did here in the first quarter. So Our book's a little different than competitors. We are no longer, we capped everybody in the book at 18%. We have not been doing gray zone since June of last year. We're in runoff mode. We've reduced and blocked a lot of the accounts from even getting additional loans. So I think, you know, what I can say is there's been volatility. It's higher than what we thought. We've booked an amount that we think is consistent with what we think the liability will be. But, you know, we've got to watch what happens over the next several months.
Makes sense. And as a follow-up just on the cash balances you guys have been building, are you still anticipating the need to put $2 billion of cash into G Capital in 2011, or is that something that maybe, given your experience, is looking a little bit less necessary?
Well, I think you know, we originally had that estimate when we were looking at the December outlook for capital, around $2 billion. I think if you look at the way the math works on the income maintenance agreement, it should be less than that today if things continue. You know, if you look at the first quarter, interest fixed charges were somewhere around $4 billion, right? So 10% of that is $400 million. In the quarter, G Capital made $200 million of pre-tax earnings. So if you just did it on a quarterly basis, the payment for the first quarter would be $200 million. Now, I don't know what will happen annually from a pre-tax and from an interest, but that gives you an order of magnitude if everything just was straight line what it would be. And so we think it's going to be less than the $2 billion, but we're you know, we have to see what happens with the rest of the year and whether we have additional restructuring. But I you know, right now that outlook looks positive.
That makes sense. And then just lastly, I want to talk about just asset sales. You know, I think at one point or another, you talked about selling private label credit cards a couple years ago, and now there seems to be a liquid market out there again. Is this something that you're reconsidering?
You know, Scott, not specifically. I think what we've tried to do is create a path to, you know, $440 billion of E&I that really doesn't require any, you know, any special dispositions that's 100% in our control. And so that's the way we look at it right now. And then I think we just have to see, you know, how these businesses perform, how the capital markets look, you know, over the next year or so, and make strategic decisions accordingly. You know, that business has done extremely well. The whole competitive dynamics are different than they were a couple years ago. You know, nonetheless, I think we're really focused on creating this great specialty finance GE Capital business that's going to be high margin into the future. So 440 is in our control and doesn't really require any big dispositions at all.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Steven Winoker with Sanford Bernstein.
Good morning.
Hey, Steven.
Hey, first question is on net charge-offs and provisions. The net charge-offs, as you pointed out, were higher if you exclude, well, higher than provisions by about $150 million or so. And so the reserve release, if you exclude FAS 167, did take place. Even if you don't round it, I mean, it was small, but it was still a reserve release.
Actually, it wasn't a reserve release. Provisions were a certain amount, and losses were an amount 100 higher than that. So it's not a reserve release when you actually use it to write off losses, Stephen.
Excluding the FAS 167, right?
I'm doing 8.1 to 8, excluding FAS 167. We actually had a provision of $1.9 billion ex FAS 167, and we had you know, a little higher than that in terms of write-off. So it's a write-off. It's not a reserve release. We actually wrote off an asset.
Okay, fair enough. And then going forward, that leads to the follow-up question on the same point, which is, okay, so then what if you think about timing versus your expectations, how are you thinking about getting to a point in the current environment where you might be able to then talk about reserve releases that are more, you know, that are substantive and aggressive?
I think you got to think through the cycle. You know, you ended up with delinquencies rising. As delinquencies rose, you posted more reserves. I think write-offs will lag the posting of the reserves as you end up dealing with and resolving accounts that were related to those delinquencies that became part of your reason for putting up a reserve. I don't have a quarter that I pick the timing. I think, you know, if you just looked at the rest of this year, if you look at the quarter, we booked $2.3 billion of provision. If we kept that provision roughly around that amount and we kept write-offs around that amount, you'd end the year with $8 billion of reserves, but you would have substantially less provisions for the remainder of the year than you had last year. And I think that's a positive. I don't think, you know, I think eventually you're going to have a point where you're not going to have even the need those reserves that you have, where write-offs will be less than the provision you put up. But, you know, we're a little too early to call that today, I would say.
Okay. And quick question back on the lake issue on Shinsei. You mentioned a ceiling in that. Can you give us a sense for, given the trajectory there, or what the ceiling is agreed between parties here? Should Japan not get better?
I didn't mention a ceiling. I don't think there is a ceiling. I think this is a thing that we have an agreement with Shinsei where, you know, we will be responsible for that liability. I think that whatever the ultimate amount is, even if you say it's worse than what we've posted this year, I think it will be manageable for us.
Okay, but you're lockstep with them, however, wherever it goes.
Absolutely.
Okay, and on the corporate item side, I think it was around something like 25% to 30% down year on year. Can you just give us a sense? Was it restructuring, pension, cost reduction?
Corporate
how
item.
To think of it? Yep.
I'm not sure what line we're on.
Corporate items on the industrial side.
On industrial, we have less restructuring offset partially by higher pension.
Okay, so...
Yeah, pension's up about $200 million, and, you know, we did about 3 cents of restructuring in the industrial corporate last year. We did about 1 cent this year.
Okay.
And the security gains in there as well.
Okay. And then finally, last question, just on the M&A pipeline, Jeff. When you talk about the flexibility that you have in that last slide, and we've talked previously about the, you know, thinking about the dilution that's going to be created from NBCU, et cetera, how are you thinking about that pipeline and the most likely segments still in terms of where you are hoping to really close something significant over the next couple of years?
I think when you look at the infrastructure portfolio today, we all have businesses that we can invest in and like growing. Again, as I've said earlier, we like bolt-on acquisitions that are financially attractive, where we have leadership teams that can step in and run those acquisitions, working with our partners. So, you know, that's the way I would look at it. We've got, you know, a decent pipeline out there, but, you know, look, I think we've got lots of options. You know, the redemption of the preferred stock, buyback potential. So, you know, the way I would look at our financial picture is that, you know, it's pretty strong, and with GE Capital's earnings rebounding, that's quite positive. So, you know, we just have lots of options on this last page in terms of the things we can do and still grow earnings and still have lots of cash.
And Jeff, just to put that a little further, are you prioritizing in that comment, therefore,
not necessarily. Again, I think we just want to do what's in strategic best interest for the company going forward, but, you know, I just think the good news is we've got lots of ways to create shareholder value.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks. See you, Steve.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague with Vertical Research Partners.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey. Just a couple more things on capital and how to think about reserve release. You know, obviously, whether it was founded or unfounded, you guys took some criticism on the way up as losses were mounting that, you know, provisioning and allowances were low, and, you know, the argument was the accounting, you know, made it all formulaic, and, you know, the provisions would come up as the losses came up. Therefore, I'm wondering, you know, how formulaic it is on the way down, and in fact, you could give us, you know, kind of the roadmap that we should be thinking about, whether it's, you know, the level of write-offs, the trend in delinquencies, a certain, ratio, you know, of provision to losses or something that for those of us on the outside looking in can try to get some kind of roadmap of how to think about this inflection point.
Well, I think there's a couple of ways to think about it. If you actually look at the financial statements and you look at what we booked as the reserve for losses last year each quarter and you look at what we booked this year in the quarter and you compare that going forward, you can get a pretty good feel for how you think if nothing else changed and we kind of had a normal first quarter and you continued at that level, what would be the impact? We booked $2.3 billion of provisions in the first quarter. That was flat with last year's first quarter, but it was down $600 million from the fourth quarter. If you continue at $2.3 billion and you compare that to what we booked last year in the second, third, and fourth quarter, you're going to be booking less provisions. I think another way to look at it is we made $600 million in the first quarter in G Capital. I think it's a pretty clean quarter. I think if you annualize that, you know, we made $1.7 billion in G Capital Corp last year in the total year. And if you annualize the $600 million, you're above that. And that's another way to think about it. So I think, yes, the reserves that we're going to post and the write-offs that we're going to have are going to be formulaic based on the quality of the book. I think the uncertain area is probably real estate. You look, the losses and impairments are higher than our run rate last year a little bit in the first quarter, but you see some other signs there. So, again, that just gives us uncertainty. But if you look across the rest of the book around delinquencies, non-earning assets, and the provisions that we've had to provide, I think those are two pretty good ways to look at it, Jeff.
Great, thanks. And then on environmental, you know, that doesn't always kind of rise to the surface, but it kind of popped up a little bit more than normal in Q4, I think, and we're hearing it again today in Q1. Do you guys have your arms around what we should expect there for the year?
Sure. Environmental in Q1 was less than $50 million. I don't think it was a substantial number at all. I mean, we've got – I don't see environmental in the year being a material item here that we would think we have to – do anything special on. You know, I think the one big project, obviously, you watch is the Hudson. We think we've provided for what we think we need to do based on where we are with that, and we'll watch how that develops over the year. But, I don't think there are any other individual projects or anything that would rise to a discussion level.
And then just also on GE Capital Tax, I don't think I totally followed you when you were going through just the whole description of the puts and takes. Was there... I mean, clearly we had the year-ago comp issue, but was there something in the going forward on credits that you mentioned? I heard an $800 million number.
No, $800 million is that the amount of basically lower tax credits in GE Capital year-over-year, first quarter to first quarter last year.
Okay, so that's just the comp, yeah.
$800 million if you look just off the income statement. And basically the $700 million a one-time tax benefits we had last year in the first quarter. If you remember last year, that was offset by estimates where you true up for the total year rate at GE Capital and GE. Well, even if you adjust for those this year in the first quarter, we continue to have some of those. You're $700 million higher taxes year over year in the first quarter of 2010 versus 2009.
Right, and then just...
Consolidated company.
Finally, can you give a little more color on price? You did, Jeff and Keith, at points talk about positive value gap. It sounds like price is down a little bit in gas turbines, up in wind. How about across the rest of the portfolio?
You know, Jeff, if you look at the what's in backlog, right? You know, the you've got positive price in backlog, and then the new order, what we call the new order pricing index in Q1 was also positive. So, you know, that's I think that's a good sign, and deflation, you know, continues to be pretty strong. So that, you know, I think this is something that we watch the value gap very closely, and I think we feel pretty good about it.
Great, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
all right, Jeff.
Your next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Sorry, and maybe I'm just making this too simplified, and I hate to beat the dead horse here on the reserves, but if provisions are lower than write-offs, isn't that a release in the reserves?
No, it meant that you actually wrote off some asset accounts. I didn't release any reserves. I actually took assets down by writing off an account.
Gotcha. So I see. Okay, so that it's not that simple as looking at your total write-off number versus what your provision is.
Well, the amount went down, but it's because I actually, you could, whether you call it a cleanup or whatever, the write-offs in the quarter were $2.4 billion and the provisions were $2.3 billion. So I actually stepped into and you know, whatever you want to call it, I finalized the write-off on certain credit accounts that run on my books. I didn't release any reserves here.
Okay, gotcha. So I guess going forward,
I think you're going to see that phenomenon. I think you know it's not a reserve release when you actually have write-offs above the provision. We actually booked $2.3 billion of provision. We didn't release any reserves.
Okay.
I don't know how to be clear on it.
Yeah, gotcha. And so going forward, that trend in write-offs, I mean, is the $2.4 billion, given the leading indicators, kind of is that what you're referring to as a peak number? Are we going to go through a couple more quarters here where, you know, you have this, whatever it is, a headline or a reported kind of mismatch in that number? Because over the last couple quarters, you know, you guys have clearly, the provisions have been much, much higher than the write-offs. So, how do you look at that 2.4 going forward?
I think the more important number is what's the provision going to be, Steve. I think the change in write-offs is going to be what affects the net reserve balance that's left, but I think the provision number is what I talked about as being the thing that, you know, you think you really should be watching. I think write-offs have lagged provisions, as you said, and you know, just theoretically they should be above provisions as you come out of the credit cycle. So I think the more important number is that provision, and if we're flat at 2.3, you can look at what that will do in terms of benefits versus the rest of the year.
Right. Okay. And on a real estate, you wrote down, I think you said $600 million bucks in assets. What's the is there any change in the ending unrealized loss? I think it was $7 billion at the end of the year. Is there any change in that?
I don't have an update of that in the quarter. We will update that in the second quarter and give you that during the second quarter. I do not have an update on that right now.
Okay. And then Jeff, sorry.
You know, there was a lot of depreciation, and a lot of those write-offs do eat into that. I don't know what the net number will be after you get done with that analysis, though.
Okay. And then Jeff, a lot of questions around capital allocation. Is EPG too early for you guys to get a little more specific on your priorities? I mean, I think it's obviously a big question out there, and you guys have talked about at a high level, you know, all the various options. Do you have enough visibility on the year-end cash to get a little more specific at EPG? And then with regards to the dividend, would you reinstate the GE Capital dividend prior to doing, to raising the dividend at Industrial, or is that kind of all in one, you know, one fell swoop?
The way, the first thing, Steve, is I would say that, you know, the timing on the NBCU transaction isn't in our control. You know, things seem to be moving in an orderly way, but that's a little bit out of our control. But beyond that, I'd say EPG is a good time for us to give a pretty good vision for how we view capital allocation, going forward. And so I do think that's a good thing, a good subject for that meeting and how we're thinking about it. The GE Capital dividend, look, I think the GE dividend can grow independent of the GE Capital dividend, but it is a high priority of Keith and mine and the management team to restore the GE Capital dividend in a timely fashion. But the GE dividend, I view as being independent of that.
You know, the comments that we made previously about growing the dividend in 11 don't assume that we grow the GE Capital dividend, Steve.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Your next question comes from the line of John Inch with Merrill Lynch.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, John.
Good morning, John.
Hi, guys. Hey, Keith. I think at the December 8th meeting, you called out prospective provisions in 2010 of $11 to $12 billion. If you annualize the 2.3, you get 9. So doesn't that theoretically suggest, in terms of just pure EPS, that 2010 could be somewhere between 10 to 20 cents above last year just on that basis?
I think I think we have two categories. We have losses and impairments.
Okay.
Okay. And you also have the FAS 167, which we added those receivables, and that will result in higher losses. So what we said in December was that the base case of around 12 on losses and impairments, another $1.5 billion for the 167. You know, if you look in the first quarter, the actuals on that same basis were $3 billion. So you annualize that to 12 versus 13.5. I think it's a little less than what you said, but it's directionally correct.
Okay. I also, just as a follow-up to that, what about the tax credits? You identified that they had come down that much. I'm assuming sort of these trends are likely to sequentially prevail, even though there's a little bit of seasonality. I mean, does this suggest, given how much they were down, that we could be looking at a tax expense in 2011, or what are the puts and takes there?
Well, I think
for capital specifically.
Sure, I think actually the first quarter GE Capital tax credits are pretty representative of what the structural benefits are for GE Capital. You know, if the current legislation, first of all, the subpart F has to get reenacted, which we believe it will, but if that legislation and that framework stays in place, you know, the tax credits that you see in GE Capital in the first quarter are pretty representative of kind of our run rates on a quarterly basis, John. So what will change is as we have additional pre-tax income, and you can see the increases in pre-tax income, those will get tax provisions against them of whatever the incremental rates are in the 30 to 35%. And you would have to have, you know, you'd have to have several billion dollars increase in pre-tax income to start to offset those tax credits on a quarterly basis. You know, $1.5 billion of pre-tax would offset kind of the tax credits in the first quarter, and then you'd have zero as a rate. So I think the structural benefits in the first quarter are pretty representative of what you're going to see going forward if the legislation stays in place. And then as we have higher pre-tax income, the tax rate will rise in GE Capital.
But it sounds like it could still be headed for a net tax credit in 2011 based on your comments. Is that the implication?
It depends upon what pre-tax is in 2011. I think the tax credits that you see on a quarterly basis, you can kind of say that's kind of structurally what we expect in 2011.
Okay.
But then what happens to pre-tax?
Okay, now that makes sense. And then I want to go back to the corporate line question. I think the 295 that you did in the corporate and items and eliminations line, I mean, was down pretty substantially from the run rate. But then the corporate line in GE Capital was actually up a lot year over year. So has there been some sort of reallocation between the two buckets? And maybe you could just give us a little bit of a walk of what's you know, why is it only 295, and is that actually a run rate sort of on a quarterly basis for that line item specifically?
Well, 295 for the corporate items and eliminations in the schedules, that's, you know, less restructuring offset by more pension, basically. That's why you're down 100 year over year. On the capital side, you know, if you look, we had capital finance equals GCC now, so some of the things that were in Capcorp previously are probably in what we call GE Capital today, capital finance. That may be what you're looking at. I think in the quarter we had restructuring in Capital Corp, about a penny. We had some marks and impairments in the treasury group, and then we have about ongoing $100 million of ongoing costs associated with running the operation, the overhead, and the facilities and global functions.
Your next question comes from the line of Bob Cornell with Barclays Capital.
Does GE have an industrial business?
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Continuing in the line though, the reserves as a percent of financial receivables were 2.51. I mean, you know, where, you know, can that ratio bottom? I mean, historically you guys kept it at 2.62, whatever, and you know, the SEC mandated you move that reserve around relative to the loss content in the portfolio, so forth and so on. I mean, is that what you expect to happen, you know, going forward over the next couple of years? Is that reserve level would drop back, you know, to, you know, where it had been, you know, in the trough in the last decade?
Look, the reserve levels will follow the quality in the portfolio. As delinquencies and non-earnings roll over and decline, your reserve levels are going to decline. It's a pretty straightforward relationship, I'd say.
You know, you didn't comment, I think you referenced the net interest margin, but didn't specifically allude to it. You know, what happened to net interest margin?
I don't have a specific number on net interest margin in the quarter.
Well, you guys gave a chart, you know, in a quarter ago talking about how that net margin had peaked, bottomed, and was starting to rise.
Yeah, I haven't changed the estimate for the year. You know, I think I don't have it updated on a quarterly basis. We said last year was about 4.6 for the portfolio going to 5 this year. I think that's still true. No, the new business is still around 3 ROI, but I don't have that updated on a quarter, Bob.
Yeah, now you guys been over this. So the total provision was 2.3. I mean, you know, how much of that provision was the commercial real estate book, and how much was everything else? It was $400 million for commercial real estate. Did I hear that right?
No, in the quarter, in the provision itself, about $200 million. The rest was in impairments, not in the loss reserves for.
Okay, and the impairments was how much in the quarter? Did you say $600 million?
Pre-tax, yes.
Pre-tax.
$600 million pre-tax, about 4 cents after tax.
So just looking at the provision, you know, is it fair to, you know, imagine that, you know, the provision ex commercial real estate comes down from here, and that the commercial real estate, you know, tracks, you know, with that end market goes up a bit? I mean, how should we think of, if you were to disaggregate those two numbers, what should we expect?
I'd say that a way to think about it maybe is the debt book in in the commercial real estate business is in the financing receivables and will be included in the loss provision results. And our debt book today, with a lot of it at around 100% loan-to-value, is almost mark-to-market. So depending upon how commercial real estate values change on the debt book, you know, that will show up in the loss provision. On the equity book, it's a longer-term view. It's what our rent's going to do over time, what will happen to occupancy, how do we feel about lease-up and releasing properties. You know, we do a pretty big review of that twice a year. We do a quarterly review of any troubled properties every quarter. So I think in there, you know, we had $600 million pre-tax of impairments in the first quarter. I don't know if that's a run rate, Bob. You know, we have to see what happens to all those dynamics. That's got a little more volatility in it. I would say that on the other side, on the debt side across the portfolio, boy, as delinquencies have come down and non-earnings have come down, I think you're going to continue to see that positive. The provision will follow that positively, including the debt book and real estate.
Our next question comes from the line of Terry Darling with Goldman Sachs.
Thanks. Good morning. Hey, Keith, start with technology infrastructure margins, which were much stronger than what we were looking for in the quarter. Typically, you know, you build from here throughout the year, but I'm just wondering if you might comment on that profile that you're seeing.
In technology infrastructure, I think you're seeing, you know, the strength here is obviously the healthcare business with good earnings leverage. We expect them to continue to have a pretty good year as you go through the year. I think aviation actually in the quarter gave us pressure, obviously. If you X out those deals, you know, the aviation equipment versus services dynamics should be okay through the rest of the year. Transportation, I think, is just having a really tough time on equipment, but the service business, again, has continued to be profitable. So I think X the deals would be a pretty good way to look at tech infra as you look forward for 2Q, 3Q, 4Q.
You would expect that normal kind of build throughout the year, Keith, to play out?
I don't know what the build is. I said X the deals. I think the quarter's pretty representative of the way, you know, I feel the businesses should be performing as we go through the rest of the year.
Okay.
You know, we got the benefit of the spare parts price increase. You know, our spares orders are pretty good. And the service versus equipment mix is remaining positive, slightly positive in the quarter, and that should continue through the year.
And I think you'd mentioned a gain on sale of some planes and GECAS. Can you just call out that number for us if you have it?
It was less than $50 million. I don't know what it was.
Okay.
$20 million, I've been told.
Okay. And then coming back to the order outlook commentary, I'm wondering if you just fine-tune a comment on the orders for the service side of the business. Do you see that as picking up over the balance of the year, or is that, you know, something we should expect to continue to be in a little bit of a downtrend for a while?
I don't remember what big one-time orders we had in 2Q through 4Q last year. I think, you know, I'd expect them to be closer to flat as we go through the rest of the year as a more normal operating indicator.
Okay. And then lastly, you know, a lot of companies talking about in the financials world kind of normalized earnings power, and I'm wondering, you know, with the trends getting better, if you can talk a little bit about that. I mean, you've given obviously the 440, you've talked about, you know, where you see the loss cycle going out to 12, maybe refine your thinking on ROA and tax maybe to just sort of finish the penciling out exercise for us there.
You know, Terry, I think, you know, we've kind of set a 2 ROI target, you know, for the business, and so it's just arithmetic, you know, as you go through that, and then the reserves go where they go, and how long that takes is how long it takes. But, you know, our focus is on having a good, high-margin, specialty finance business.
And tax is still kind of a wild card.
And taxes, you know, I think, you know, what Keith answered earlier is, you know, the right answer.
Structural credits, $1.5 to $2 billion in the current tax legislative regime, and on top of that, pre-tax income generating positive tax provisions.
And on that regulatory regime, any new thoughts on potential change or lack thereof?
I don't, you know, Terry, we're all kind of watching it at the same time you guys are, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
You know, the big structural positives are all in place, obviously.
Yeah.
The grandfathering of GE's ownership of GE Capital, the fact that we can keep the banks. I think that when you look at the consumer protection, it doesn't really affect us that much. We're prepared for a different regulator. We think we're systemically important, and we're prepared for the Fed to be our regulator if that's the case. And I think the teams have done a pretty good job preparing for all that. The details, as Jeff said, we're going to have to see how they work out. But the big structural things we feel really good about.
Thanks very much, guys.
Great. Right,
thanks,
Jerry. Thanks, sir.
There are no further questions in the queue. Mr. Schomburg, do you have additional remarks?
Great. Thank you, everyone, for joining our webcast today. The replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon. Our second quarter 2010 earnings webcast will take place on Friday, July 16th. And as always, Joanne and I will be available all day today to take your questions. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.